नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
निरंकुशं कुशलं चेतरं वा।
निरंकुशं कुशलं चेतरं वा।
यावन् मनो राजसा पुरुषस्य सत्त्वेन वा तमसा वा अनुरुद्धम् निरंकुशं कुशलं चेतरं वा। Auspicious. Cha, also. Itaram, other than auspiciousness. Sinful activities. Va, or. Translation. As long as the mind of the living entity is contaminated by the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, his mind is exactly like an elephant, an independent, uncontrolled elephant. It simply expands its jurisdiction of pious and impious activities by using the senses. The result is that the living entity remains in the material world to enjoy and suffer pleasures and pains due to material activity. This is Jiddu Bharat speaking to Maharshi Mahabhaya. Jiddu Bharat, who just appeared to be an insignificant, ordinary, perhaps even subhuman person loitering by the road, speaking to a great king. And the king is just soaking this up. He's just inquired from Jiddu Bharat once he heard the quality of what he had to say. Once he heard the quality of what Jiddu Bharat had to say, the king became stunned and realized this is not an ordinary person. This is somebody who was actually speaking of something deeply profound, wisdom that is, you know, rarely presented, and something I desperately need to hear. Please explain more. Please speak to me. And so he's talking about how the living entity, contaminated by the modes of material nature, engages in activities that entangle him in suffering and pleasure in the material world. Srila Prabhupada's purport is divine grace. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that material pious and impious activities are both opposed to the principle of devotional service. Devotional service means mukti, freedom from material entanglement. Freedom from material entanglement. But pious and impious activities resulting in entanglement within the material world. If the mind is captivated by the pious and impious activities mentioned in the Vedas, one remains eternally in darkness. One cannot attain the absolute platform. To change the consciousness from ignorance to passion, or from passion to goodness, does not really solve the problem. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Sagaram Samadhyayatam Brahmabhuya Kalpate, one must come to the transcendental platform, otherwise, last mission is never fulfilled. Om Nagyan Timirandhyasya Virajiran Shilakaya Chaturam Nityam Nihan Tasmai Shri Purve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master is kindly opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto him again and again. So we appeal to the assembled devotees, please offer a prayer to Krishna now. Please pray to Krishna that what we have to say here, we invite everyone to speak, what we have to say here is only what we've heard from Guru and Shastra. We are associating on the platform of truth. We're encouraging each other in reality. And what we have to say here is only what we've heard from Guru and Scripture, with no distortion and no inappropriate motivation. Please pray to Krishna that that's what happens here. When we do this as an offering to the Lord, this is an offering to Krishna, we're gathering together to hear the words of Scripture and to elaborate on other scriptural references that reinforce and more completely explain what this verse is about. We do this to please the Lord. The result, everything is accomplished in a wonderful way. We'll receive the inspiration and the vision and the determination to go on in this life of devotional service. Hare Krishna. So, into this room, I'm thinking, you know, realize they're from another species of life, practically speaking. This body was born in 1948, you know, before, at least a few days before you guys were appearing in this world, perhaps before your parents were appearing in this world. A lot of the people that I know from my childhood killed each other or killed themselves, you know, I mean, coming from a probably quite a different background than what you're familiar with. So speaking across a gulf of, you know, a different experience, a different trajectory coming into Krishna consciousness. Of course, we're speaking about the absolute truth. In any case, Krishna is so wonderful that he's calling us out of our varieties of entanglement and darkness into a platform of pure love of God and sanity. And so we have that in common. And just to give you a little perspective, in the course of my life, I feel like I've gone through, maybe you know the story of Rip Van Winkle. You ever heard of that? Rip Van Winkle? Here in New York, he was one of the, I think, Dutch colonists coming to this continent from across the ocean, and they had colonies up in upper part of New York State here in the mountains, and they would hear the rumbling of the thunder in the mountains, and they would, according to their legend, that was the like demigods having bowling tournaments, right? You know, then the Dutch play bowling. It's a, you roll this ball and you knock over these wooden pins. And they would. So he went exploring and he came across the demigods, and they gave him some kind of intoxicant to drink. They would, you know, be partying and drinking. And this intoxicant put him to sleep for 20 years. Woke up and he went back to the village. He had a long beard and everyone thought he had left this world or disappeared for some reason, and his grandchildren were there, and you know, he was like, you know, looking at another world. So I've had some Rip Van Winkle experiences. I have no idea. I mean, really, when Prabhupada came in this era of the counterculture, you know that term, counterculture? People were alienated by the general mainstream idea of, like, you know, get married and have a couple kids and get a house and, you know, have a car and a front lawn and, you know, and two cars, and then you'll be happy, just, you know, by a material arrangement in suburban America. And that was our indoctrination that was recommended. But then our generation saw, okay, our parents have the house in the suburbs and the car and the children in the front lawn, and something's missing, right? So we had, there was this counterculture. People would, the term was used, drop out. Turn on, tune in, drop out, you know? People dropped out, precipitated out of the liquid of society, and became like a counterculture that Prabhupada appeared during that time. Well, people were rejecting that idea that material prosperity and consumerism, buy a bunch of things, you know, and that will make you happy. And they were thinking that there's got to be something else. So we were dropping out, you know. We grow up watching the television program. In my synchrotron experience, I find myself, well, thank you so much, I find myself sometimes stopping into a storefront or into someone's house. And the television is on, or some film is on, on a tube, and I catch little snippets of one thing, one child saying, you know, I'm 12 years old, television is my life. You know that quote?
No idea.
You know? No. You know, and that's how we lived, you know, we watched the television programs, you know, so many hours in the evening and on Saturdays and on Sundays, and the broadcasting was in between the lines of whatever the storyline was this is what normal parents look like, and this is how they talk, and this is what your house should look like, and this is what your neighborhood should look like, and this is what your, you know, your friends should look like. So, you know, we had that conditioning, and then we actually kind of like dropped out of that. I remember when I was in a dormitory in college, there were 30 people on the floor where I lived. One person had a television. A little thing that he kept in the closet, and once in a while he would take it out and some of us would go there and watch a program. You know, one person. Years later, after I joined the Hare Krishna movement, and we would go through the off-campus housing, you know, all these different universities that have 115, 110, 90,000 students, this massive off-campus housing, and we would go from apartment to apartment to apartment to apartment to apartment for hours every day, talking to people and engaging in devotional service and really looking into what the culture looks like. And sometimes in a room there would be four televisions on at once. You know, they have actually screens where you can watch, you know, this football game and this sitcom and this, and the news at the same time. You know, I can't even imagine how these kids have men are doing their homework at the same time. And we knock on the door, you know, we're having a complaint about this apartment. And they said, well, what is this? I said, well, too much studying and not enough TV. You know, they would, you know, laugh uproariously because it was just on all the time. So we kind of dropped out of it, even in an apartment where I lived with five students. And later, we moved out of the dormitory. One of my roommates brought in a television, and we lived on the fifth floor. And I think after about a week or two, we actually threw the television off the balcony. You know, said, get that out of here, you know. I mean, we were like immersed in one phase of the call, and then we said, no, we're not going to, Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the massage, the message, you know, that, you know, you're being brainwashed by this, broadcasting, you know, about a value system that's not working, and, you know, so we rejected it. And so for like years, I lived in New Vrindavan, there were no televisions there for the 4 years that I lived on the farm. It wasn't even one. And, you know, you go from immersion to like withdrawal, and, you know, so I have this Rip Van Winkle experience, and then going back into decades of traveling Sankirtan in this country and going into people's houses and seeing all these like films and all this and everything. I actually didn't see a movie for about 35 years.
Yeah.
Not one film, you know. I mean, you have to understand, this is like, you know, so you guys are from another planet, you know. You have to understand, you're looking at somebody who's like, you know, a little bit off the grid of your...
But that's what Prabhupada said to you. He said, don't too much film.
Yeah, he said, don't, you know, this isn't important. And so therefore we come to Bhagavatam class and make jokes about, you know, how ridiculous, you know, the other culture is. But there's something to be said for interacting. Here we see somebody, Jeddah Bhatt, has actually totally dropped out, you know, from being the principal administrator of the planet to being, you know, an avadut, you know, wandering, you know, apparently an insane person, you know, to actually speaking to another person in a rulership capacity about something that would completely reorient his life, you know. So we have some similar experiences like that. And people are, there's an interesting, like, you know, response we get from people. I remember being in New Zealand, and with a preaching program that Devananda Swami was managing there, and this one guest said, "You never saw Star Wars. You don't know what that is." And I was like, no. You know, Prabhupada in his innocence would also say like that, you know, "What is this?" You know, and he would explain to him. Interestingly enough, wonderful hearing, you know, people explaining to Prabhupada things. You know, I love those conversations, you know, where they're telling him snippets from the media, and he's responding with it, with the Vedic knowledge, which is a whole other way of looking at reality, really. And of course, Prabhupada would look at the material world and give wonderful illustrating examples. I was just listening to one conversation he was having at Swarup Dhammadharma. He was there walking, and he said, "So there is this creature, this bird, this from the wetlands. You know that? You know another conversation? What you call it? Buck. You know what is this?" And Swarup said, "The crane, probably crane. You know what is a crane? It's a bird with long legs, you know. And the buck, he is following the bull. And the bull has this large testicle hanging down. And the buck, he's thinking it's a fish. And he's waiting for it to drop." You know, this is like a profound, you know, statement from looking at a bull's testicle hanging down. And Prabhupada said, "It's never going to drop because it's not a fish, you know, so he's going to be disappointed." And material nature is like that.
Oh.
Promising you enjoyment, but it will not come, you will not get enjoyment like that. You know. So it's a creature from the bird, from the wetlands, the walk. Crane, probably. Crane. You know, I love those things. I love that example he gives, like, you know, here we have the Pacific Ocean. And there is, on one side there is the ocean, on the other side there is the jungle. And there is this creature, what you call it? Crab, Prabhupada. Oh, crab. Crab. The crab is a creature of the ocean. And when the bird comes to try to eat the crab, if he goes to the ocean, he will be safe. If he goes to the jungle, he will be killed. You know, there's no shelter for him in the jungle. So we are like the living entity on the marginal potency, and we are actually safe in the spiritual association. You know, he was giving examples from, and he also, you know, and he would give examples when people would explain to him, like to a child, you know, because he wasn't familiar with him, our ridiculous material culture and value system. And he would cut through with the Vedic wisdom. So here we have Jadabhar piercing the paradigm, the worldview of this king, telling him, no, the people who are thinking pious activities or impious activities, they are entangled in darkness. This is not recommended by a person with intelligence. Avoid this time, this kind of pious activity. Take to
devotional service.
Take to devotional service. It's a simple message. You serve Krishna. What was he quoting yesterday? Mukti Bhakti Siddhi Kama Asakaliya Shanti Krishna Bhakti Nashkama Adhe Shanti. A person seeking in material enjoyment, liberation, mystic power, they'll never ever become peaceful. Krishna Bhakti Nashkarma Atta Eva Shanti. A person engaged in Krishna Bhakta will certainly achieve peace. This is the direction the Guru is pointing us. We serve Krishna, and people are concerned. It's frightening to think to leave off your activity for material safety and to take just to take to devotional service. That's what Krishna says to Arjuna. Abandon all desire for your own gain or safety. Forget it. Forget it. It's absurd. It's not only probably not such a good idea, it's ridiculous. You know, material life is ridiculous. Endeavoring for material means of gain or safety is not what's recommended by Shastra. And that, of course, that might mean that we might find ourselves in a perilous condition materially. And we are. We have no material means of support. But we are depending on Krishna. And we are willing to accept, in our endeavor for devotional service, we're willing to accept whatever condition Krishna puts us in. And the conditioned soul's response is usually, wait a minute. What about, you know? And how in the world did Prabhupada ever have the confidence to come to a foreign country with no Lakshmi, no supporters, no safety net? We've heard it and heard it and heard it, but it's just astounding to think of him getting off that boat, stepping into Manhattan, Boston, anywhere. Please.
I like what he says, like, in the last stanza of his prayer. He says, I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna.
Have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. The analogy is given, we've heard it before, we've heard it again, we've heard it again. We can have the mentality of the kitten or the mentality of the rat. The kitten is held by the neck, by his mother. If somebody's holding you by the nape of the neck and you're hanging in the air and they're going someplace with you, you're just like, okay. And it's not just, I sure hope she knows what she's doing. It's just the kids just saying, you know, yeah, my mom, she knows where we're going. I'm in the care of somebody with superior ability and intelligence. And the kitten is totally relaxed, just hanging there. You can pick a kitten up by the scruff of the neck, you know. And it's not that they're stupid, it's just that they're confident that, you know, that that's the mentality of a devotee. The rat is also in the jaws of the cat.
Oh, no.
But the mentality of the rat is, uh-oh, I'm in bad shape here. And how to maintain that mentality? At least we have to hear about it and see. I really don't know what's going to happen today. Mm. Right? We go out on Sankirtan and
no idea.
With empty pockets, basically, into the alien life where, you know, surrounded by, you know, ridiculously bewildered, misdirected people, and present to them something that they didn't expect. And then, you know, with, you know, relish the adventure of it, you know, just to, you know, relax into that and say, okay, Krishna, here we go. You know, what in the world is going to happen now? You know, and we never know, you know. I've seen seen with my own eyes, my God brothers, God sisters, for decades and decades and decades, go on and on and on, chanting Hare Krishna, and simply doing nothing else all day long except serve Krishna. And they went on with their life. And a lot of them have left their body. I was even had some experiences of people who've come back and Chris, I've been able to recognize them.
Yeah, can you elaborate on that?
No, but the thing is that they've lived an entire life and even left this world without leaving off a life of full dedication to devotional service. In such a spectrum of different kinds of services and places in the world and degrees of material competence that, you know, leaves no quality or corner of, you know, variety of personality untouched. And I'm totally amazed, you know, when somebody comes to devotional service. Even though it's the most obvious, substantial, intelligent thing to do. In this world of a misdirected civilization, we're actually finding surprising when someone takes to devotional service. Do you have any idea what you're getting into? You know. And the material paradigm is always there. There are always people telling you devotional service is slavery. You're brainwashed. You know, this is not something that's going to bring you happiness. You're going to be very sorry. We met one Tibetan Buddhist monk in Malaysia one time, and he's from Italy. He went to the Tibetan monk, and he was he got this job as an anchorman on a television, prominent television program. You know, they have anchorman, somebody's taking, and that's like a, you know, $5 million a year job. It's like a super cool thing. You are the guy, you know, anchor person, the main, you know, central, you know, and somehow or other the union came in and said, you know, hey, he can't. He had a job for a little while, and then they said, no, he can't have that job yet. He has to qualify himself by doing some other journalistic occupation for a year or something. So he got a job as a newspaper reporter. And he was a very smart person, so he got one of those police scanners, you know what that is? This little radio thing that as soon as one person calls 911, you know, hey, somebody just shot somebody on 3rd Street, you know, and the police come, you know. So he would hear that, and then he would get there before the police got there. You know, somebody just jumped out the window on 14th Street, you know. He would get there and he would interview the daughter of the lady who jumped out the window, you know, before the police got there. He was like sharp, you know. And he said, you know, I was like looking into the most horrible and morbid things that a human being can do every day, all day long, jumping from one, you know, dirty deed to another. Wow. And really sticking my face in the dirt, you know. And the girl told me that, you know, her mother tried to pull her out the window as she was jumping out the window, you know. And, you know, something that the person really didn't want to say, you know, much less broadcast, you know, that my mother tried to, that she was committing suicide, she tried to pull me out the window with her, you know. He would get these things and broadcast them, and at one point, he said he was in the news agency dining room, and one of the waiters, because the news reporters were served by waiters with white gloves, one of the waiters came in, Silvio, and he said, pardon me, what was his name? I can't remember. But the waiter, he told me this, the Tibetan monk told me, and he said, please don't tell this story in the news. That's my mother, you know, it was like a, I don't want to tell the story.
Why?
But it doesn't matter. It was terrible. His mother did a terrible thing, and the waiter begged him, please don't. So he went back to the chief editor, and he said to him, I want to withdraw that story, and I want to submit it. And the chief editor said, you out of your mind? We're going to sell 100,000 newspapers today. This is a great thing to put on the front page, you know.
Oh.
And he realized, you know, that he had contributed to hurting someone by broadcasting something terrible about his mother, and that he couldn't withdraw it. And he said he kind of like lost, you know, impetus to be a good, quote unquote, reporter, and to be broadcasting that kind of information. It was one of his, you know, points where he turned to spiritual life after that, you know. And he said, then he went to the editor and he told him, you know, I'm quitting. And the editor said, when are you quitting? Why? And he told him, I'm going to take to spiritual life. I think I'm going to become a monk. The editor told him, you fool. You know, you just stay here a few more months and you'll get back to be the anchorman position. He said, I don't want to be the anchorman producing this kind of information and distributing it. And he said, his boss told him, you fool. You know, you come back to me after 20 years. I want to see what happens to you. You know, so many people, they go to the convent, they go to the forest, they go to the monastery, and they take up this spiritual path, you know. It's just an empty promise. You know, you'll be sorry. So you come back and see me in 20 years, you know. And so he did. He went back and he saw his boss, and he said, so how are you? And his boss was, you know, complete toast, you know, just a crispy critter, you know, burnt. You know, he was like, he had been through three painful marriages and divorces, you know. He had, you know, he said, you know, I've got all these young bucks nipping at my heels, trying to, like, eat me alive, you know, the competitiveness of this industry, and they're all trying to get my job, and, you know, and I'm getting older, and, you know, my sexual desires are still there, and my ability to fulfill them is decreasing, you know, and my sexual appeal is decreasing, and, you know, and I've got ulcers, and, you know, and my son is a drug addict, and, you know, he was just like, meanwhile, this monk was like, you know, he was saying, you wanted me to come back and see you after 20 years, to see how you were like, you know, bathing in relishing material life, and how I was suffering in my renunciation. And he said, but all I see is that, you know, you're frustrated and miserable. And myself, I find myself more and more satisfied to dedicate myself to a life of simplicity and truth and service to God. And very, you know, profound, direct experience of the contrast. If you go this way, where does it mean? If you go that way, what will be the result? And he said that the man laid down the challenge, you fool, you know, you'll be sorry you took this spiritual path, you know, you gave up this possibility of, you know, a lucrative and successful career as a famous, you know, television personality. So we're given that choice every day. Maya's always saying, don't go with this Prabhupada. Don't listen to this, you know, Krishna consciousness philosophy. You'll be sorry. You know, Maya is actually directly telling us that what we're doing is foolish and that we're going to regret it. And it's a lie. Maya is, your own senses and mind are lying to you. The material mainstream is lying to you. Your own mother, if she's not a devotee, if she's telling you, you know, to do something other than serve Krishna, it's ignorance, you know, even if she's thinking she's doing it for your benefit. Right? And I can't tell you how many times I was, why don't you get a job? You haven't had a paycheck in 50 years, are you out of your mind, you know? What is it?
I had a nice experience yesterday with Sankirtan. I was just sitting at the table, taking a little rest, and then this homeless man came up to the table, you can clearly tell he was exposed to the elements. His fingers were all blistered. He had no teeth. He had like snot coming out of his nose. But he had $3 in his hand. He said, "Please, can I buy a Bhagavad Gita, please?"
Wow.
So he gave me the $3, and I was just thinking, you know, wow, here's this man. He's coming up, you know, practically begging if he can get a Bhagavad Gita because he knows. As we do the Bhagavad Gita, it was $5, but he only had three. He was like, "Please, I'm homeless, this is all I have." And then while all the other people were trying to stop him, were trying to, "Please stop and here, take this knowledge," and everyone just walking by like these crazy guys.
Right. You actually have to ignore one voice. You know, there are different voices. And one voice is indicating that this is a good thing. And there's another voice. It seems materially logical and sound and well-intentioned. Please.
It seems, what you're sharing, there's two voices. There's something I was thinking with you, Adipush, you have such a great example of something that's in the material world, and you're doing so much devotional service, and you're facilitating for so many devotees that have some work and have, you know, some humble income and shelter. And so, on one hand, we're seeing renunciation, but then on the other, we're seeing renunciation through Yukta Vairagya, seeing everything as Krishna's energy. And I think you really are such a great example of the devotee that's really utilizing everything that comes into your life in service of Guru Krishna.
I want you to remember that the choice you make is not something you make and then that's it. You've got to make it every moment and every day. And Maya does not shut up after you've said, "No, I'm not going to do that." She just keeps knocking on the door. Right? "No, you're wrong. No, don't do it," you know? It's amazing. It's really, really amazing. And, you know, we laugh at the whole sort of material nature. You know? It's amazing how the lie is perpetrated and no matter how much evidence there is to the contrary, at every moment, she's calling you out of devotional service to another quality of life, to another kind of desire, to another value system, to another lifestyle, and actually trying to instill in you panic. You know, not just like doubt, but panic that what you're doing doesn't make any sense, and you're going to be very sorry. Maya keeps telling you that. It's you know, she doesn't take a day off. I love that thing Devananda says, before you get up in the morning, Maya already got up, took her shower, chanted all around, and she's waiting for you. She's waiting for you. Ha! You know, she doesn't even take a coffee break. It's just like there, you know, constant barrage of like misinformation. But unfortunately, we have the truth. The spiritual master says, engage in devotional service to Krishna. So if you're ever not sure what to do, just engage in devotional service to Krishna. Come what may. Come what may. It may be death. You may actually say, "All right, I'm going to serve Krishna, even if they kill me." You know, we have to carry it to that degree. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna.